I hate cooking, but I like eating.
Yeah. So, you know, cooking for me has always been this really fantastic way to connect to the culture of any language I'm learning. So everywhere we go, I try a new one. And this one I discovered when we were in York, which is this really beautiful town in the north of England. So let us take you on a culinary adventure around the world. We're going to explore 6 different recipes from 5 different countries, from UK sweet treats. British food also gets a bad rap, right? But their desserts are really good, and I used to be quite the sweet tooth. To the hearty flavors of Ukraine.
I brought you a recipe which is very easy one. It's very traditional in our family and in Ukraine as well.
To the vibrant tastes of Brazil.
People from my state are kind of proud about our food. So we make everything like a world heritage something call right now, but they say that.
And finally, we have a gift for you. It's a PDF with all 6 of the recipes that we're going to talk about today. So if any of them stood out to you, you can try cooking them at home. I would usually say crepes.
Be careful, Deval, there. You're going to say
you don't want to say no.
I'm gonna make you some for breakfast. Aww, yeah, boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where every single week it is our mission to take you beyond the classroom to speak English confidently and naturally, to connect to the world, and to use your English as the doorway to your greatest life. Today's topic is near and dear to my heart. Mate reminded us that hopefully we have eaten before this episode, because otherwise we might be drooling all over the microphone.
Could you define the word drooling?
Drooling, it's when you're salivating, like liquid comes out of your mouth or gathers in your mouth because something is provoking you, your sensations.
Yeah, you can say my mouth's watering, right?
Oh, yeah. Or you can call something a mouth-watering dish as an adjective. Mm-hmm. That's a really nice
expression.
More
literal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if something really looks appetizing, you can say that looks really mouth-watering. And I love this whole concept of combining cooking and language learning, because for me, I've had some experience with this. My example was with French. I got really obsessed with French cooking for a while. So I would have my whole ritual with my French learning, cooking in French, maybe get a nice bottle of French wine to enjoy while cooking the dish and while eating it. And I would create this environment by putting on some French music. I had my playlist that I would listen to while cooking. So I
full
could feel
immersion.
Like I was thrown. Yeah. Exactly. Thrown right into a kitchen in Paris.
Nice.
And I think a lot of English learners listen to a lot of music in English already, but maybe if you're learning English, you could try some American dish or some British dish. We'll give you maybe at least an example or two today. And you could have that one specific type of music you listen to while cooking. Like for me, what would come to mind in cooking American food might be some 50s, 60s jazz, Ella Fitzgerald.
It might not only be music. For example, if you follow some chef, American or British chef, it can be like the actual video of a recipe and you will be following. So I used to do it with Jamie Oliver's videos.
What a great way to live your English.
And the videos were really nice.
I think I myself got into the world of cooking because I had to, like when I was 18, moved out of my parents' house. And I just had to learn everything on my own. So I don't know if I know how to make so many like fancy dishes, but or fancy recipes. But I know the practical ones, and I think I know how to make them good.
Do you actually remember the first dish you cooked on your own?
I mean, if you ignore stuff like eggs, right, which are it's not a real dish, but well, like omelet, like
depends,
omelet. Yeah.
It was interesting. You said omelet, and I would say, in my accent, at least, I would say omelet. So cutting out one of the E's in there.
Omelet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like Hamlet, like the play.
Yeah.
There you go. Hamlet's omelets.
Gotcha.
It is interesting, though. It's good that you learn to cook easy, but not everyone takes that independence from home. Like in the States, most of us get kicked out of the house. Not really. We go to university when we're 18. And a lot of people I knew would not take that as an opportunity to learn how to cook. They would just rely on ramen noodle, which, you know, is like that you just throw it in boiling water and then throw
super
in the
super popular
seasoning.
Among students, right?
Yeah. And it's super cheap. Or mac and cheese is a very popular go-to snack or meal for Americans.
Mac and cheese, is it like macaroni with cheese, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. That's like super American that we shorten the macaroni and it's mm-hmm. and shorten the and. So it's mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay. Nice catch. But my mom, I think what she did was really brilliant. When we were teenagers, she had me and my brother once a week, each of us had to choose a dish, a recipe that we wanted to make and give it to her. And she would, you know, when she went to the store, she would get all the ingredients and everything. And then we had to prepare a meal. Each of us would have to prepare one meal a week. So when I got to university, I already had, you know, some experience under my belt.
Not just experience, right? Because like I was going to ask you, why is it that you love cooking so much?
Yeah, I suppose that instilled in me to more of a love for cooking.
Mm-hmm. I love having Mira by my side when cooking and actually like asking her to join. So she's my sous chef very often.
Do you have one of those stepping stools?
Yeah, when she was younger, when she was like really little, she used to use that.
Now she's tall
right
enough.
Now she's like, yeah, she's tall stove. Enough. Mm-hmm. Actually, she's like grown up enough and she already tried to make pancakes on her own.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Nice. So you're all, because I know you mentioned when we were preparing this episode that you don't like cooking. You just do it for for sustenance, for not survival,
to,
right?
Yeah, for survival, not to starve, not to make my family starve. Yeah.
So soon you'll have, hopefully she'll take more to cooking than you do. And you'll have, you know, your personal chef there.
Yeah, she'll take over the kitchen.
Personal chef.
Trained like
chef.
Your,
yeah.
Your evil plan.
I hope so.
Not that evil
plan,
but...
yeah. I'm practical.
Practical. So we'll be looking at a few different recipes. Each of us have brought different recipes. And I loved seeing your guys' choices because, well, I've lived in Brazil, so I recognized at least one of the ones that Izzy brought today. But Ksenia, one of yours reminded me of other things that I've mm-hmm. had, but I've never had the Ukrainian version.
Okay. Happy to share that with you.
I'm curious, actually. Because Ethan, I saw yours and I thought it was fancy compared to the stuff I usually make.
It's not that fancy. It's elaborate, I would say.
Elaborate, right? Like mm-hmm. I maybe...
It takes some time to prepare it. So I thought I would just start with the background here. This dish is actually, it's not from the United States. I didn't bring any American dishes. Something people should know about the United States is most good food isn't American. It's one of the great things about the United States is we just have... It's this melting pot of different cultures. And so there's all this different cuisine and then there's like fusion of different cuisines. So people tend to think that food in the United States has a bad reputation. But in fact, we have like really world-class, scrumptious food that's multicultural. And a lot of times you don't even have to break the bank to go out for a meal.
Break a bank. What a nice expression. Can you define mm-hmm. that?
If something breaks the bank, it leaves you poor, leaves you penniless.
You may say about an expensive food also, it costs an arm and a leg.
Yeah, a meal out yeah. can cost an arm and a leg if you're not careful where you go. So this one I picked up actually when I visited the United Kingdom for the first time. I had the opportunity to go there with my mom when I think it was like 16 years old, maybe 15 or 16. And we went to visit my aunt who was living there. And we traveled all around England and British food also gets a bad rap, right? But their desserts are really good. And I used to be quite the sweet tooth when I was a teenager. So every time we went out for a lunch or a dinner, I wanted to try something local, some local treat. Like you have tea time there, you have these really nice scones and clotted cream, mm-hmm. which is like almost like a butter or something like that, and jams and so on. So everywhere we'd go, I'd try a new one. And this one I discovered when we were in York, which is this really beautiful town in the north of England. I think I just ordered it because the name is so fun to say, sticky toffee pudding. Sticky toffee pudding. And when we went back to the United States, I was like, okay, I have to look this up so I can make it. And I would make it for any get together we would have. And it always was a hit. It always got rave reviews. Like everyone loved it. So in a nutshell, just to describe what it is. So it's called sticky toffee pudding. Do you guys know what a sponge cake is?
Yeah. So the sponge, as I know now, is like a foundation for a cake. It's this like fluffy thing, which turns into a cake.
It's supposed to absorb what you put on top of it.
Yeah. You don't want just a sponge cake, like it needs toppings or it needs things because otherwise it would be quite dry. But it's nice for this because just to describe to people what it is, it's basically a cake that you make with dates and there's a lot of mm-hmm. other things in it as well. And you top it with caramel sauce, with toffee sauce, which is similar to caramel. And then you also accompany it with cream. So this isn't at all, we do whipped cream in the States, but serving a dessert just with cream that's not whipped, that's not very typical, and ice cream. usually vanilla ice cream. Mm-hmm. So you have these things, and it's nice that it's like that spongy texture because it absorbs all that cream and toffee sauce and ice cream.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to show what dates is for those watching on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Not so common sure. word.
And so that's interesting, like having a cake with dates. Did anything else, you guys read this, did anything else stand out to you as being out of the ordinary?
Not really. Yeah, now I regret saying that it was fancy because thinking of, I have most of the ingredients here. I could actually make it. So yeah, maybe I can try it.
Oh, and by the way, I forgot to say that we'll be sharing a PDF with you guys. We have like as a special present that will have all six recipes that we're going to talk about today. So if you want to cook any of them, you can do that. And then as an added bonus too, we're going to add all the vocabulary on there with definitions. So even if you aren't a cook, you don't want to cook them, but you want to learn these different words and so on, you'll find it all there. So you can click the link down in the description if you're on YouTube or in the show notes if you're on any other platform.
Izzy and I will have to download it too to get that recipe.
Totally.
There you go. For me, the weird thing with this recipe is that it has coffee, instant coffee in it. And you have to actually kind of like make the coffee and you mix this with the dates, you kind of blend everything together so it absorbs that flavor.
But that reminds of an Italian tiramisu. You also have instant coffee there, right?
There you go. But it's not typical in American desserts, I would say, in American cakes. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I guess what was more unique about it is the instant coffee.
Yeah. And the tea. Like you actually, when you put everything together, you leave the tea bags in there with the coffee. But the recipe I used to do, it didn't have the tea. So I think you could take it or leave it. You can leave it out if you don't have British tea regularly available, or you probably have enough with the coffee already there.
Okay, so if you were to summarize your process for making it, what would that be?
Summarize it, put on some good music and... But yeah, there's kind of like these different steps, but I'd say don't let it intimidate you because it's not so difficult. It's just kind of like you do the different things. And like, I think there's different moments you have to leave something. You can prepare something else. You can prepare the sauce apart while something else is sitting. And I used to do this while probably also doing like the dinner. So you could kind of do different steps at the same time while something else is baking. You do part of this and then, you know, you come back. So I think we can leave it at that. You guys can check out the PDF if you want to learn. There's a bunch of really great vocabulary here as well. And really, if you try it, it's going to blow your mind. It's like such a tasty dessert.
So guys, I brought you a recipe, which is very easy one. It's very traditional in our family and in Ukraine as well. And some interesting fact before I share the recipe. When you hear the word pancake, when I learned English at school, we would call this thing a pancake. But then when I was watching American movies and everything, I saw that, okay, actually pancakes are not those things, because Ethan, I think you ate a lot of pancakes in your childhood with maple syrup maybe. So those are like smaller in size and a little bit fluffy. Yeah, those are thick pancakes. And people can also add banana there. Exactly, to decrease the amount of sugar, just to use banana. I now do this thing also when I prepare pancakes.
My mom does that as well for my nephews.
Yeah, that's healthier, and it adds this extra flavor, banana flavor, which really goes really well with cinnamon. The banana with cinnamon, it's a wonderful mixture.
With that word, your British came out, flavor.
Flavor. Yeah, I'm mixing my American and British accent here. So the funny fact with those pancakes, sometimes they are the thin pancakes, which I'm going to be talking about today, are sometimes called crepes, or I saw the pronunciation is crepes because like it's coming from French.
I think crepes is actually more correct, but I would usually say crepes.
Careful the vowel there. You don't want to say craps.
You don't want to say crap. No.
We'll make you some craps for breakfast.
What a crap. There's some craps waiting for you. Yeah, there's some craps. Okay. So crepes or craps, and they can be sweet or savory.
What does that mean, savory?
Yeah, so savory is when it is not sweet, but salty. So the thing is, again, we have in Ukrainian a word for pancakes or for crepes, which is mlinci. But when we add filling, it is called nalysniki. So it's a pancake with filling, but a thinner pancake. Oh, fun fact, another one about pancakes is that I learned that in Britain, they have Pancake Day And this is like a Throve Tuesday, which precedes the Ash Wednesday. So they eat pancakes on this day. And actually, in Ukraine, there is a tradition, but we have a whole week of Shrovetide. So before Lent, this is a pre-Lent period, the whole week we are supposed to prepare and to treat our relatives and friends and ourselves with pancakes, those thinner pancakes.
Do you get sick of them?
No. And no, why do you know why not? Why we're not getting sick and tired of that? Because every day the feeling is different.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'll be sharing one with the cottage cheese filling.
So I saw this, Ksenia, and do you know in the States we have a very similar dish that's called blintzes? I don't know if you've heard of this.
Maybe because it comes from Russian name for this food, because in Russian, blintzy would be blinny. So blintzy is like
It's a Russian food, blintzes.
So I think it was inspired, like American dish was inspired by Russian immigrants in America, I guess.
Because it has a cheese filling and it might even be cottage cheese. And then usually you top it with berries or jam or something like that.
So you might, have you ever tried this?
Yes, I used to love them. I haven't had them in many years though.
Okay, nice. So everybody, I guess, knows how to cook pancakes, so I won't go into so much detail there. And all the vocabulary you can check on that PDF we were mentioning. It's just like an important thing, because when you prepare these thin pancakes, it's important to swirl your pan so that the batter spreads evenly on the surface. That makes them really thin. Okay, so you have to master this thing. So you take a ladle. You like pour half of it, I guess, on the frying pan, and you have to make this swirling movement so it's spreading.
To coat it, right? To coat the surface of the pan.
Yeah, exactly. And it should be like baked from on both sides. So when, for example, the edges turn golden brown, you know that's the time for flipping. And yeah, when you are done with all the batter and all your pancakes are ready, then it's come for rolling them with the filling. Right. And make those wraps, I guess. And it can be in a form of a roll when you do it like this.
I think they're literally called rolls, right?
Yeah. They're called rolls, I guess, in English. And the best thing is to serve it with sour cream. I don't know if it's easy to find sour cream sour in Spain and Brazil. You can exchange it with or change it with yogurt.
So that's funny because it's something that you also serve with my second recipe that I brought, which is a Mexican dish, and they use a lot of sour cream, but it's not so common here. But what I found that you can use almost the same as creme fraiche.
What is creme fraiche?
It's like a French variant of sour cream.
It's more like yogurt. Like if you guys haven't tried it, it probably tastes like yogurt.
Maybe you could use plain yogurt.
Yeah, plain yogurt would be fine. Maybe find the one with the higher percentage. Yeah. Easy, but do you have sour cream in Brazil?
Yeah, maybe it's not as easy to find. Like Ethan said, in Barcelona, I don't know if it... You guys, there's that version, right? The French version. But here, like normally you'd use yogurt. So we have like salad and that type of stuff. You have like the yogurt dressing.
Okay. So I should say that all our Sundays, we have pancakes for our breakfast. Our Sunday breakfasts are with these types of pancakes.
I want to try it. It sounds so yummy.
So far, we've had dessert. Would you say like yours, Ethan, is more like true dessert, or is it something that you can eat maybe in the afternoon with some tea?
I think it's definitely a dessert. I don't think that it's
what
we might call like for your tea time or for afternoon coffee. You might have something that's not so sweet, right? Like a muffin, for example. Or we even have something called coffee cake, which is like not a super sweet cake that you can accompany with coffee. But yeah, I think the sticky toffee pudding, because it's got the caramel sauce and the cream and everything, it's definitely to finish off a meal and be like really, you know, satisfied.
Probably the kids love it.
Yeah, of course. So the sugar high.
Yeah. Mine is quite sweet as well. It's definitely can be eaten for dessert, but very often you'll see people actually having it for dinner. So mine is called cartola, which translates, if you translate it from Portuguese, that's like top hat. You know, the top hat that, the fancy, it's not a super fancy dessert or recipe though. It's super easy to make. And I think it even came from a more has a more like humble origin here in my state of Pernambuco. here in Brazil. So the ingredients are few. Like you need bananas, cheese, a specific type of cheese, like something that you can grill, you know, that's not going to melt entirely if you set it on like a pan.
And that's something very unique for Brazil. I don't even know if we have any cheese like that that doesn't melt so much.
It's like curd cheese, right? Solid curd cheese that you can slice.
Yeah, I remember when we were in Brazil and you were grilling cheese, and I was wondering, oh, I wouldn't be able to find such.
So here, I don't know if you can get it there, Ksenia, but we have something called halloumi cheese, which is from Cyprus. And it's very similar to the queijo coalho that we had in Brazil that they do on the grill. But I don't know if you would use exactly that cheese for this recipe. It looked like the one you're using here is thinner, easy.
No, you can vary. There's so many types of cartola, and it's actually meant to be something that you can use a cheese that you have at home. As long as you can, it's not going to totally melt.
What would be your go-to cheese if you were making this at home?
Well, my go-to is mozzarella.
Oh, you can do it with mozzarella.
There's different kinds, right? There's different types. The one that's like just melts probably is not a good idea, but there's kinds of mozzarella that they can hold some temperature and it's not going to be sitting there in the frying pan for too long. You can just like need to wait until it browns a little bit.
I already want to try it.
And it's not a huge issue if it melts just a little bit either. So again, bananas, cheese, a thick slice, right? It's got to be thick and enough to cover the bananas. So you're going to, for example, in my recipe, you just need two bananas. You slice them in half, like
long ways, right?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So then you'd have four slices, like four halves. Mm-hmm. And so those are the halves that are going to first go into the pan with butter. And you want them to be just like a brown, you know, the bananas just like really brown.
Like caramelize them, right?
Caramelize them a little bit, but with their own sugar. Like you're not going to add sugar at this point. So that's actually all you do to start. You just throw some butter, like a spoon of butter in the pan, and then the bananas, and then you flip them and you have the bananas. And then in the same pan, you just put the cheese, the slice of cheese, which should be large enough to cover the entire surface of all the bananas, right? Because you're going to lay the four halves like side by side. So you're going to have this square, almost like the size of your hand maybe, right? So you need a large slice of cheese there for that. And maybe this is something you want to split and eat with somebody else because it'll be quite big for a single person.
This is so uncommon here to fry bananas.
And fry cheese.
And fried cheese, exactly. But now we melt cheese a lot, so it sounds a little bit like, you know, familiar, but frying banana, no, we eat it like fruit, just like apples, pears, you know, you eat banana. I try to actually deep fry bananas and it's super tasty, like so delicious. So I imagine it also has this sweetness and this caramel.
And this has so few ingredients, but it looks totally decadent. You could even put it on top of a slice of toast or something, maybe to suck up some of the juices from the banana.
Exactly, because you have the juices from the banana, you have the butter. The better the butter, the better for the taste, right? Like use quality butter. And also like a final ingredient there is a mix of sugar and cinnamon powder, right?
Cinnamon goes so well with banana. Yeah, this mix.
It almost sounds like banana French toast, but with cheese instead of toast.
That's a popular mix, right? A mixture of like sugar and cinnamon powder. You guys have that.
We even call that cinnamon sugar.
There you go.
It's a really cinnamon sugar. Fancy name.
Yeah. but by the way, you just reminded me, if I can very, very quickly go on a tangent with this sugar or pure extract. So guys, has it ever happened to you to mix between vanilla extract and vanilla sugar?
To mix the two of them together?
No, I mean like to confuse between them. So at home, I had like two packs and one of like pure vanilla extract, and another was vanilla sugar. And once I mixed them up and I just totally spoiled my dessert because it became bitter. You know, when you add too much vanilla, like pure vanilla extract, it like tastes really bitter. But there are like those special packages, you know, with like vanilla and mixed with sugar. It, you know, you can add the whole pack into your dish. So it once happened to me. I remember now.
I learned that the hard way when I was young because I thought of vanilla as like vanilla ice cream or vanilla that you have with desserts. And I remember finding when I was little, a bottle of vanilla extract in our pantry, in the place where you keep some food, and like drinking like a swig of it and just being like,
oh my God, poor kid.
That doesn't taste like vanilla. Well, it does taste like vanilla, but it's just like not sweet at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the sugar, the cinnamon sugar. So that's the final ingredient, and you're just going to pour some of that on top of your dish there, which is going to be, oh, you're going to lay the cheese on top of the bananas. That's how you finish it. And if there's some butter, melted butter in the pan still, you just like also drizzle some of that on top of it.
So is it like a sandwich? Like you have cheese, banana, and cheese, right? So you have banana inside both cheeses?
No, the first layer is the bananas. Actually, some people even pour the cinnamon sugar first on the plate, and then the bananas on top of it, and then the cheese, and then cinnamon sugar to finish it, to kind of coat it.
That sounds so tasty.
Yeah.
You could even maybe do that like inside of a pão de queijo, like a Brazilian cheese bread, to have like the double cheese, the extra cheese.
Many ways. Actually, yeah, like now that, because you said toast, right? You could maybe try it with the toast, but ice cream is another interesting combination.
Oh, yeah. That would make a lot of sense. And you have like then that, I love those that are like the hot and cold. When would you usually eat this? Is it, it's a dessert or it's breakfast?
It's a dessert. Well, it can be for any time of the day. Like I've eaten it in the morning, but probably like if I'm traveling or something and I'm feeling like having a really heavy breakfast. But it is sugary, quite sugary and dense.
I just wanted to ask, is it something only homemade or you can actually buy it somewhere?
No, most restaurants have it here as an option for dessert or dinner.
But specifically from Pernambuco. I don't think I've seen it before.
I'd say so. It's people from my state are kind of proud about our food. So we make everything like a World Heritage something. I don't recall right now, but they say that. So there's like multiple recipes. There's also the bolo de rolo. Look it up. And that's another one that is... This is like protected. The recipe is protected by the UN or something because it's like World Heritage food. Yeah.
I think you could take maybe one of the Ukrainian crepes and put a cartola inside of it and roll it up. Probably be pretty tasty.
Yeah, would be so tasty.
That's
so
a thought now. Nice. So we have our last three recipes, which maybe we can just hint at, but those are just going to be in the PDF because we don't have time to go over all of them today. And of course, if you guys enjoyed this, let us know in the comments. We could do another episode like this, sharing more recipes. I think all of us either like to cook or cook for sustenance in Ksenia's case.
Yeah. I hate cooking, but I like eating.
Exactly. That's it. So my second recipe, which would have been good. All the things we shared were sweet, right? Or at least like a bit sweet. So this might have been good to share with. And I think, Ksenia, you also had something that's savory.
Yeah.
But mine, as I said, was Mexican. So I chose enchiladas. Enchiladas usually are like the crepes that you share, Ksenia. Like usually it's something that you roll up. But the recipe that I'm sharing in the PDF is one that my mom taught me. And the way she does it is to make it less tedious to make without all the rolling. Is you do it more like a casserole, which is where you have like a tray and you do layers of something. So it's almost like a lasagna. You do Mexican tortillas and then you do the filling. You can do different fillings. The recipe I'm sharing has chicken and vegetables, but you could do also if you're vegetarian, just with vegetables and cheese, or if you prefer beef or whatever. And then you need the enchilada sauce, which you can buy if you can find it where you live, or you can just make it. And then tortillas on top and you melt cheese and it goes in the oven. It's really nice dinner. So that's one thing that I make quite often here when we have people over for dinner. And of course, serving it with guacamole and sour cream, since I talked about sour cream earlier.
Julia, those dressings, those servings, they change the food. Yeah. They add that kick.
My favorite part of Mexican food, it's like the salsa sauce, right? Which is actually salsa stands for sauce, right?
I guess so.
Salsa in Spanish means sauce, yeah. Usually you say here like Mexican salsa.
So it's like that tomato sauce, like really rich.
You have a lot of different types of Mexican salsas too. Yeah, but that's a typical one like pico de gallo.
Probably my favorite part of Mexican food.
So Ksenia, I believe we had a dish from Mexico, from the UK, from Brazil, from Ukraine. So I believe you're taking us south a bit from Ukraine.
Yeah, so I brought another recipe. So guys, as I already mentioned, I don't really like cooking. That's why I try to go simple and search for really simple recipes. And this one is my go-to recipe when I don't have anything to eat and I have to feed my family with a healthy dinner or lunch. So, and this recipe I learned from my mother-in-law, my Turkish mother-in-law. So this is a traditional Turkish soup, and it is called mercimek çorbası in Turkish. And this is a lentil soup. Lentil is a type of legume. You have those chickpea and green peas, right?
Beans. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Beans. So, although, but that looks so beautiful and it adds such a creamy texture to this soup. Oh. So, if you're a vegetarian, you can cook it just with water. So, lentils and water.
Or vegetable broth.
Yeah, vegetable broth. But if you want to make it like more
hearty.
Hearty, yeah, that's the word, like to mm-hmm. fill you, like really fill you. Then you can use like chicken broth. Basically, the main secret, guys, you will learn the recipe in the PDF, right? But the main secret is, again, serving to really make it taste Turkish. As soon as you prepare the soup, you should serve it with wedges of lemon mm-hmm. and those pepper flakes, you know, a lap of pepper flakes. So you should squeeze lemon into your soup and add those red pepper. That really makes a difference. Yeah, because mm-hmm. it's really plain if you just cook lentils. It has mm-hmm. rich flavor, but it doesn't stand out. But this, you know, this lemon juice with pepper really makes it special. Really like
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
my mouth is watering now, Ksenia. This is, it's really funny too you shared this because it's a dish that I grew up with.
Really?
My grandmother was Lebanese and I don't know how that we used to go when we would visit Detroit, where my mom's family is from, and she still has some family members. We would go to a Turkish store, and we tried there this type of soup. And I believe my aunt was like very good at like being flirtatious and like getting recipes from places that had things we really liked. Mm-hmm. She got their Turkish soup recipe, and so I also grew up with this. And the lemon thing is what yeah. is just mind blowing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Izzy, what's your last recipe?
This is similar to what Ksenia shared, but I think I have my own take on pancakes because this is a recipe of mine. So we covered Brazilian cuisine, right? We covered Mexican. What else?
Ukrainian.
British.
Turkish. British.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. so those, right? We didn't repeat. And now we're going to get into, I guess, Izzyan. The world of Izzy cuisine, because this is a recipe of my own. So I actually adapted something that I have here in Brazil called crepioca.
I used to make this all the time when I lived in Belo Horizonte.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much time and it's like pretty healthy breakfast.
Mm-hmm. And you need an ingredient that is tapioca flour, right?
That's what I brought to Ukraine because I knew I wouldn't find it here. That I brought it from Brazil.
Ethan mentioned that, like that it can be pretty difficult to find, I think, in other countries. I looked up, I guess in the United States, mm-hmm. it's like everywhere, but in Europe, maybe it's not as popular, right?
I found it on mm-hmm. Amazon. It's probably mm-hmm. quite a bit more expensive than in Brazil, but it's still not that expensive if you have a hankering or you want to try it.
You'll need that ingredient. If you have that ingredient, tapioca flour, I bet that you'll have everything else on the list.
It is starchy, right? Like the tapioca. Can you define for people what it is, maybe?
Well, originally, the ingredient is a type of flour. Not flour like a rose. Flour like is like a wheat flour they used to make bread mm-hmm. cake, right? Mm-hmm. So it's white and it really feels like cornstarch, right? Mm-hmm. The way it looks. It's really simple. As Ethan said, it's super easy to make. And I will share the recipe in a PDF. But the filling is actually what's my contribution here to this amazing dish. Oh, actually, oh, no, there's something else. Like in the batter they need to mix, which is, again, banana. You know, mm-hmm. I think Brazil is also famous for bananas. It's really
You're
have
a
so
fan
many types
of banana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so easy. Like it's nature's snack, right?
Mm-hmm.
Snack bar. You peel it, eat it. So you just kind of mash a banana, a single banana, and mix it in the batter, the liquidy thing that you use for making the pancake, and you'll see that the recipe is super simple. But the filling is gorgonzola, blue cheese, oh. and ricotta.
That sounds so good.
you'll mix that, because the ricotta is going to make the gorgonzola totally like something that you're not going to get sick of eating, because it is salty, mm-hmm. quite salty gorgonzola. Yeah. But with the ricotta, if it's not salty ricotta, it's going to be something that you can eat like a ton of, going to be able mm-hmm. to eat so much of it. And with the banana batter, it is just like the perfect combination. It's not super sweet. It's just like enough for making it incredibly balanced and something that you mm-hmm. can eat. Mm-hmm.
I love like that touch of blue cheese is like gorgonzola on different mm-hmm. recipes, because it's like if you just have like a little bit, it gives it a really unique flavor, right? A nice richness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I used to do a lot too, the like Romeo and Juliet crepioca that had goyabada mm-hmm. and then cheese, like queijo mineiro, and that's really nice as well. Aw, yeah, so let's jump now into our game for today, which is Celebrity Impressions. Basically, I'm going to send each of you, we'll take turns, a sentence. It's a silly, zany sentence, and you'll have a celebrity that you need to imitate saying that silly sentence. And Mate has been kind enough, our producer here in the studio, to grab a couple too for me, so I don't know what sentences or what celebrities I'm going to have to imitate, so we're all here in the same boat.
Okay. Ethan, can you explain what does zany mean?
Zany means kind of crazy. It's similar to silly.
Yeah. Okay. There's an emoji, right? Like, I think it's a zany emoji. It's like the tongue is like the eye or something, right?
Ah, really?
That looks like a zany emoji.
It's a zany emoji.
Okay.
All right. So, Ksenia, do you want to do the honors?
Okay. You will be guessing, right?
I'll try.
This is her. Like, oh my God, this podcast is so fat. You guys are like the best audience ever.
Probably American. Maybe, but
yeah, it is difficult.
It's feisty. I don't know.
I don't know if it was anywhere near her, but yeah, let me try again. Like, oh my God, this podcast is so fat. You guys are like the best audience.
No, it's nice. Like you gave me two, like the simple size got bigger.
Take a wild guess.
Not Oprah, but.
No, but another famous host.
Ah, Ellen.
Ellen.
That was my first, actually. Yeah, I was going to say Ellen, but I was like, no. Nah.
All right, Izzy, I'm going to send it to you now.
You ready?
Ready.
I pour my heart and soul into this song, even though the lyrics are basically just me complaining about airline food.
So someone's coming from Britain. Maybe it's Adele?
You got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the Cockney accent.
The Cockney accent. You'd have, is it the glottal T?
The glottal T, yeah. Oh, there might not be there any.
Heart and soul, right? So hot and soul.
Hot mm-hmm, and soul. Mm-hmm. About.
Yeah. That's what I remember. She doesn't pronounce the T's, the hour.
Yeah, because like in American English with connected speech, you'd have something like mm-hmm. heart and soul. It's like heart mm-hmm. and soul.
Yeah.
And go to British Cockney accent, you have hot and.
And because the sentence was ending with food, I remembered this video. We made a lesson on this, where it's
right.
super hard to recognize the accent, like what she's saying, because she has very thick accent there.
Okay, well, on the plate, we've got two fried eggs. We got, what's that? It was before I ate it, two bits of bacon, two grilled tomatoes, three black pudding. You lot are mean for giving me that.
Yeah. The first time I ever heard her, I was shocked because she has such beautiful lyrics and she sings so beautifully. And then she has Cockney's not known for being the most posh or the most eloquent sounding of British accents, let's say.
Or elegant, right? It's like, and her lyrics are can be quite elegant.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Your turn, Ethan.
My pet peeve, when people leave their shoelaces untied, it's a knockout for fashion sense.
Okay, so can we do this together? Like Sandy and I just like have a conversation.
Yeah, both of you are in the dark here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy has a lisp, right, Ksenia?
Mm-hmm. He has a lisp.
Yeah.
Maybe since Ksenia and I did it twice, maybe we could do it again.
My pet peeve, when people leave their shoelaces untied, it's a knockout for fashion sense.
I have no idea.
Okay, I got Mike Tyson's probably the, and if not Mike that's Tyson, it. That's it. Right? I was going to say Arnold Schwarzenegger because the second time sounded really German.
He has sort of like a cutting way of speaking, Mike Tyson. So, Ksenia, here comes your second one.
Really? Okay. I'm going to try. Oh my God, is that a podcast microphone? I can't believe I'm getting interviewed by a microphone. This is literally the highlight of my life.
Okay, now it's got to be Arnold.
Yeah, that's him.
There you go. Nailed it.
That's him.
Yeah, that was really good.
Thanks.
All right, I think it's my turn now. I can't believe you wore this outfit. Could it clash anymore with my existential dread?
Mm-hmm. I feel like you've listened to this person a lot in your English learning, Ksenia.
I've listened a lot in my English learning.
There's a line there that gives it away.
Yeah, I thought about it, but that would be like too easy because that line, could it be any more like that? So it,
yeah,
of course, it rings a bell.
Could you be any closer?
Matthew, yeah, could you be any closer? It like rings a bell. It's like from Matthew Perry.
Yeah, from Chandler.
Chandler from Friends. Yeah. Of course, I totally like, I heard this and I thought, oh, it's just like Chandler from Friends, but it would be like too easy.
Ethan.
Okay, I'm not watching anything, so I'm just doing this from memory. He who must not be named is totally afraid of spiders, especially the fuzzy ones.
Maybe it's like, hello, what's the name of the actor who played Harry Potter?
It's that.
Yeah. It's Daniel Radcliffe.
Radcliffe.
It's him, right?
Yeah.
And I was going to say, like, is Ron actually the he who must not be named? Because he's the one afraid of spiders, right?
I think that's the joke there. All right, guys, so don't forget to download that PDF in the description so you can get all these recipes. Even if you're not a cook, then go and learn all the different vocabulary. There's a ton more than what you picked up here, and that's absolutely free to download. So you can get that right now by clicking the link in the description. And of course, also check out the Real Life English app if you are not already listening to this there, or even if you are. We have just recently added some fantastic new features that you guys have been asking for. So we added reminders. So basically, if you're having trouble picking up the habit to use the app every day to study vocabulary so that you're never forgetting it, you can use it naturally in conversation. You can set up a schedule that works best for your study time. So you can have the goal of studying 10 minutes per day, for example. And you're going to see that if you're consistent with this, consistency really is key. And finally, if you are enjoying this podcast, you can really help us out a lot for free by, if you're on YouTube, subscribing, giving this video a like, really helps us to be discovered by more people who want to improve their English. And if you are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or another platform like this, then leave us a 5-star review there. All this, again, it helps us to keep making great content like this for you guys. And remember that no matter what divides us, that which unites us, like great food, is far greater. So, 1, 2, 3. So, dear global citizens, today we are going to be doing something a little bit different. You will be learning with a learner just like you, but who has achieved an incredible native-like level in English. So, my guest today is our content manager here at Real Life English, Izzy Mignot.
We're trying to help people understand each other, literally and figuratively.
What's the whole story? So maybe we could just start from the beginning. How did you get started learning English?